We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
College basketball's coaching carousel is far from an exact science. It was fair to expect that Michigan basketball would have an assistant coach shuffle, as that's pretty common when programs do well. They want to tap into the success of other teams. Sure enough, three Michigan basketball assistants left the program, but they were all within the women's side of things. Juwan Howard, staff of Phil Martelli, Saadi Washington, and Howard Eisley, all still in Ann Arbor, despite all being really interesting candidates for some of the head coaching opportunities that popped up in men's basketball after the Wolverines' run to the Elite Eight. Kim Barnes-Rico's program, on the flip side, will have an entirely new assistant coaching group. But the carousel does work both ways, right? I mean, Michigan men's basketball certainly benefits from the continuity of the top four staff members staying the same for a third consecutive year. But on the women's side, yeah, a lot will change, but this is an opportunity to snag some of the top available names within that carousel. You can lose good assistants and still push forward, still take that next step as a program. We've seen that with Kim Barnes-Rico in the past. Certainly that's the expectation again. Two assistants have been named. They both possess really impressive resumes. Kerry Moore, a basketball star in this state at Detroit Country Day, then at Western Michigan. She did climb the coaching ranks shortly after her career ended, most recently and notably the last two seasons at North Carolina. UNC was the first really big program to invest in Moore as a coach. Michigan is that first one for Val Nyima, an up-and-coming star who spent her last seven seasons at Fordham. There are opportunities with both situations. Coaching continuity on the men's side, coaching turnover on the women's side. We know what to expect from the men's side. So far on the women's side of things, early returns, the resumes look really good. We'll let you decide for yourself. Kerry Moore is on this week's edition, along with new Michigan graduate from the men's team, CJ Baird, here on Defend the Block.
We're talking Michigan basketball. Welcome to Defend the Block, where we'll take you inside the basketball programs with interviews, analysis, and so much more. Now, here's your host, Brian Bush.
With two interviews today, let's get right into it. We will have an opportunity over the next few weeks to catch up with each new Michigan women's basketball assistant. Mentioned this week will be Kerry Moore. She's coming up next. Val Nyima next week. And whenever that third assistant is established, we'll bring you a conversation with her or him. Also, we're continuing our postmortems from former Michigan men's basketball Wolverines. If you missed any of those, we had Austin Davis, Mike Smith, Sean D. Brown Jr. This week, the local kid, CJ Baird. Really great conversation coming up after Coach Moore. Next week, scheduled to have Luke Wilson. Also working to bring you Isaiah Livers and Franz Wagner as both of those young men prepare for the NBA draft process. Hope you'll enjoy, I think you will, both of these conversations. First, Kerry Moore, and then CJ Baird. Let's start with the new member of the Michigan women's basketball program. It's great to be joined by one of the newest members of Michigan women's basketball, Carrie Moore, assistant coach, recruiting coordinator. We'll get to that second title in a little bit. But first, Coach, thank you so much for joining us. Welcome back to Michigan. You were a former two-time state champ at Detroit Country Day, a star at Western Michigan. What does it mean to you to be back in this state and on this Michigan bench?
Thanks for having me, Brian. It's just incredible. I think working at Michigan has always been a dream of mine, and I really have not been home since I left, graduated from college. So to be able to, you know, do what I love in coaching basketball and do it at a place like the University of Michigan, which arguably, you know, I think is one of the best universities in the world. You know, it's an incredible opportunity. And I'm just so incredibly, you know, thankful for Coach Rico for, you know, wanting me to be a part of her program. And, you know, I'm thrilled. It's exciting.
So that's a lot of the tug at the heartstrings, the tug at home, but it also has to be a basketball fit. Why is Michigan a basketball fit for you?
I mean, it checks all the boxes. You know, I think they are coming off a record, you know, season, you know, making history, getting to the Sweet 16. And, you know, I watched it from afar and, you know, I'm so excited to be a part of that type of program. You know, that was the program we were trying to build at Carolina. And I think, you know, Michigan is 9 years in the making with Coach Rico and I'm happy to, you know, to hop on board and hopefully, you know, help elevate the program to even higher heights. I mean, just with what we have coming back next year in terms of the roster, you know, having one of the best players in the country with Nas, I mean, it's just an incredible opportunity to walk into, you know, basketball wise. And I just, you know, hope I can bring some energy.
I think you will. I'm curious because I'm amazed by basketball coaches on the men's or the women's side. They know everything about their program, but they're also keeping their eyes on other teams, other plays, you steal from each other. You glean from other programs. We know the local thought process of Michigan women's basketball. From your perspective, from afar, how did you perceive these last 8-9 years of the climb that Michigan's been on?
Yeah, I mean, it in terms of starting a program and really, you know, creating a culture that you can be proud of and building, you know, those blocks of talent, but then also putting it all together on and off the court, and hopefully that translating into wins. I think from afar, I've been a fan of Coach Rico since she was at St. John's, you know, with my time at Creighton and then at Princeton, we played them a ton, and she's just, to me, she's just a winner, and you can see how hard her teams play, and they play for, you know, for her, honestly. And, I think for me watching that, it's been, you know, the WNIT championship to, you know, getting deeper in the tournament and then now to making the Sweet 16 and having a lot of pieces back. I think, you know, the sky's the limit in terms of, you know, what this program can do because Michigan is Michigan, you know, it's got a national brand and, you know, why wouldn't anyone want to come play basketball here and get a great education?
You alluded to Nas. Let's start with her in terms of the roster that you as an assistant coach are inheriting. What from afar made her so special when you were watching her play, and have you gotten a chance to talk to her at all since you've taken this role?
Yeah, she's just an incredible competitor and teammate. I have not gotten a chance to talk to her yet. I just received her cell phone number from Amy, our director of ops, and you know, obviously she's going to be my next text or phone call when I get off with you. But I'm so thrilled. I mean, she is someone that I've, you know, obviously admired, you know, coming from, you know, the Sports City U AAU program, which is a team that I've watched throughout the years. And you knew she was going to be special, and it's great to see her, you know, her career take off the way that it did this past season. And then just for her to get the credit, you know, off the court as well, and just being the teammate that she is and wanting others to get the credit while she's, you know, getting all the highlights. I mean, she's a workhorse. She's a blue collar type player, which is one of the reasons I wanted to get back to the Midwest to coach more players like that. She's just got a chip on her shoulder and just refuses to lose. And she's a winner.
Just so you know, if you'd have been 10 minutes late and you would have said I was talking to Nas, I would have totally forgiven you.
I wish I would have known that then. I would have totally reached out.
She has blanket approval. She is very much so a friend of the podcast. It's not just Nas, right? I mean, there's a lot of really good talent on this team. What else stands out of the returning players as you've studied this team?
You know, just with, you know, all the pieces of, you know, Danielle coming in at, you know, playing the way that she did, in the NCAA tournament. I mean, she just really helped the team take off, you know, in Amy Dilk's absence, you know, and then you have, you know, kid like Leah Brown, who's coming in, you know, as a transfer last year and just really, I mean, is a star in terms of what she can do at the wing spot and the forward position. And then, you know, you've got tremendous depth. I think they have great talent off the bench, that really hasn't really seen a ton of minutes. And I'm just excited to get to know and coach those kids too. Cause I think there's, you know, throughout the recruiting process, they have a lot of kids on their roster that we wanted, you know, at the schools that I was at. So, I just think there's a lot of pieces and when you have an experience that they did this past season and they came together the way that they did, I think there's a united front heading into, you know, hopefully what they can be, you know, another historic season, especially with the seniors that they have, you know, at the helm this upcoming year.
Let's reminisce a little bit, because you are coming back to an area that you thrived as a player. First at Country Day, you won two state titles, so I'm sure those are kind of 1A, 1B for your fondest memories, but what else stands out when you think back to those days, and how did those 4 years shape you and get you ready to what you're doing now?
Yeah, Country Day is an incredible place. I mean, honestly, I think Country Day is like the high school, is like the high school Michigan. It is a place that values, you know, that true student athlete experience. The colors are the same. and you know, I was coached by, you know, my all time favorite coach. I mean, Frank Orlando is historic when it comes to, you know, girls basketball in the state of Michigan. And, you know, I think he very much has made me the person, and the player, you know, that I was, but for sure the person that I am today and the coach that I am. He's impacted my life in a tremendous way. And I still talk to him. I talked to him this past week and told him about the move. So he's just somebody that I, you know, will always consider a mentor in my life. And we won a lot, but I think we learned a lot there too. And I grew up tremendously. And he prepared me, and that experience prepared me, you know, for life after high school and life after basketball for sure.
For a while, Michigan men's basketball had the best assistant after playing at Western Michigan and Saadi Washington. I don't know now if he has that title anymore because of what you did in your career in Kalamazoo. What do you remember about those 4 years, that experience, especially the senior year, which was just so special?
Yeah, Saadi and I might have to get a little one-on-one noon hoops going or something and put it all out there. But Western was also an incredible place. It allowed me to, you know, play the game that I loved and get a great education, you know, only 2 hours from home. And my parents, you know, the one thing I do remember is that my parents were there. I looked up in the stands and they were there for every home game and 90% of the away games. And so I think I really valued that throughout my experience there. But, you know, I think just the individual, you know, honors, I think you don't think that they are as important as they are when you're going through it. But I think it's stuff that has stayed with me and sticked with me throughout my coaching career. So I'm forever grateful for that experience. And again, was surrounded by a great coach and, you know, who I talk to, you know, today and, surrounded by great teammates who are also my best friends, you know, still today. So, yeah, nothing but great things to say about Western and that program and my experience.
Then a brief professional career, you went overseas, played in Poland, and then you got into coaching. Was that always kind of an end goal for you as a transition from playing to coaching? When did you get that coaching spark?
I don't know. I think I honestly, it kind of happened just from, it was an easy transition after playing. And there was an off season where I was kind of thinking about if I should keep playing or go into coaching, and an opportunity came up at Princeton, right about the time that I was making the decision, and it ended up, you know, I ended up getting that offer before I got my overseas offer. And so I just felt like it was an opportunity, you know, one like this one that I couldn't turn down. And then what do you know, you look up 13 years later and you're still doing it. So, and you happen to be pretty good at it. So it was one of those things that just really worked out in my favor. And I'm, you know, forever grateful.
So 13 years later, how have you evolved as a coach, and what can Michigan fans and what can this Michigan program expect from you as a coach?
I think I've grown up in every experience that I've been in. And I think all of my experiences, you know, at Creighton, at Princeton, and most recently at North Carolina, I think have prepared me to be great at the University of Michigan. You know, a lot of people have joked with me over the past week, you know, about how adding the University of Michigan is going to make my resume just look incredibly insane. But I think it's one of those things where I've been, you know, I've been blessed to have the opportunity to do this coaching thing at incredible institutions. And, you know, I've been able to win, which is not something that a lot of coaches can say. And I think I think the formula for that is that one, I've worked for incredible head coaches, that, you know, set the standard, day in and day out and refuse to lose, and that have an incredible work ethic. And so I think that has been instilled upon me. And I think I've always been that type of player, that type of person, and now that type of coach, just in terms of how hard I work, and just, you know, willing to just grind it out and do the little things and literally do whatever it takes to, you know, to get players and to win games. And I want to be successful, and I want to help, you know, whatever program I'm at, make history. And so I think it'll be a great combination here at Michigan.
Speaking of combination, in addition to being the assistant coach, you will be the recruiting coordinator. What is most important during recruiting, and how have you been able to find the success that you've had in those relationship building situations?
Yeah, I think that you hit the head on the nail there, Brian, in terms of just the relationships. I think that's how I've been successful with recruiting. I mean, I think I'm a pretty cool person to talk to and spend time with and hang out with on campus. But, you know, I just really value that relationship piece. I try to be as genuine as I can when I'm talking to recruits, when I'm talking to their parents, and just talking about the potential experience at whatever university, you know, that I'm at. And I think the biggest thing too is just being passionate about where you're at and really believing in the place and the people that you're surrounded with every day. And I think that's really translated very well for me at wherever I've been, because they've all been places that people want to be at and want to be a part of whatever we're doing. So I don't think Michigan will be any different in that regard. I think if anything, you know, I'll probably have the most success that I've had in terms of recruiting, just because, you know, it's a place that I have now chosen as well. So I can, you know, reflect back upon that decision, you know, with recruits and their families, but also just, it's a place I'm passionate about and really believe in. And I really, really believe that we can be one of the top teams in the country. And so I think that will translate really well, and hopefully help us, you know, bring a lot of really good players in.
What have the challenges been like over the last year? Because, I mean, North Carolina is also a great place. You want to bring people to Ann Arbor. You want to bring people to Chapel Hill and to some of these other great programs throughout college basketball. You couldn't do that. You were doing it like we're talking right now over Zoom. Yeah. So how did that affect your recruiting process? And are we getting closer and closer to where it's at least possible that we could be normal here soon?
Yeah, I think Zoom became our best friend. We recruited nonstop during quarantine because that was just pretty much all we could do. So just like we're talking face to face on Zoom, I mean, this is what we did relentlessly for days and weeks and months. And we ended up signing, you know, the number three class in the country throughout a global pandemic. So it didn't hurt us too bad. But again, I think it, you know, I think everything, you know, aligned in terms of, you know, what we were selling and the place that we were selling and the people that we were selling, and it just all added up. And I, as old as this computer screen can get, I think it still can be, you know, somewhat transparent in terms of, you know, just being able to see people's faces and look into their eyes and hear them speak or see them speak as opposed to, you know, hear them speak. And the only part we missed really was getting them to campus. And so we tried to set up some creative type things for them to see it virtually or for them to kind of swing through on their own. But yeah, it was tough. It was not fun, but it ended up working out in the grand scheme of things. And I think, yeah, once June 1 comes around with the dead period being over, I think we're all very excited to get back in the gyms and welcome people to campus. And I'm coming down in a couple of weeks to hopefully get my feet wet a little bit. So I'm not taking the campus tour while they're taking the campus tour, and have some sense of idea of where I'm showing these guys. But no, it'll be great. I think, you know, just, I think the added combination of now Zooms plus, you know, face-to-face interaction, and then now being able to get into gyms and sitting on that sideline again, will be great.
Lastly, it's been a challenging year in change at this point. How have you changed as a coach and as a person during all of this? And what maybe do you take more appreciation in than you may not have a year, two, 3 years ago?
Yeah, I think I just value the people that I'm surrounded by every day. And I think that's, I got lucky to go through the pandemic with a team that, you know, I very much enjoyed being around, and a staff that I very much enjoyed being around, because literally we were just stuck in this bubble for, you know, 8 or 9 months, and really weren't able to go out and do much at all, if anything, you know, outside of that bubble. But so I very much, yeah, just very much value, you know, true friendship, and just, you know, that camaraderie in terms of, you know, what that team can bring, and what that looks like. And I very much appreciate family, which again was part of my decision to come back to Michigan, because, you know, I was surrounded by a family in Chapel Hill this past season, but also had an incredible supporting cast, with my family from afar. And I know they're thrilled, you know, to now have me, you know, only about 30, 40 minutes away. So.
Kerry Moore, new women's basketball assistant coach here at the University of Michigan. Congratulations. Looking forward to meeting you in person down the road. Now go call Nas.
I am on it, Brian. Thank you so much. She's my first call, I promise.
It is great to be joined by now former Wolverine CJ Baird here on Defend the Block. CJ, how you doing? What have you been up to since the end of the basketball season?
Well, thanks for having me, Brian. Wow, it's been a whirlwind. Once we finished the season, had to finish up, make sure all my stuff was in order for graduation. I actually graduated last Saturday with a few guys on the team, so that was a great feeling. And now I'm just looking forward to my internship. I started Ernst & Young this summer, June 14th. And then I'll come back to school for one more year, my master's here at Michigan. So I'm excited to get more of an education, and I'm really looking forward to the opportunity.
So you're eligible to run for president, what, 2036? Will you run then, or is it 2040 you're eyeing?
2036, I got to make sure I got all my ducks in a row, but then 2040 is when I really hit the ground running. So just wait till that.
I mean, in all seriousness, like, you know, you're in the College of Business. You kind of had that reputation of being this, I mean, really smart dude who's got a bright future ahead. Was that weird or awkward at times? I mean, Juwan is saying, like, you're going to, you know, he's going to be working for you one day. I mean, that had to have been a little strange, no?
A little bit. I think it was funny because Coach Howard is obviously extremely successful. And when people joke about stuff like that, I get a laugh off of it because I learned from the people around me and I learned from Coach Howard. Coach Howard, one of the guys that he says he'll be working for me. I learned a lot of things that I know about human interaction from Coach Howard, how to manage people, how to understand their personalities and kind of tailor a conversation or a like new process towards the person. Because obviously on our Michigan basketball team, a lot of different egos, a lot of different really highly talented, really intelligent guys, but not everybody's the same. You can't treat everybody like a blanket and you can't just throw a huge, ruling over everybody without talking to individuals. And that's something that I learned from Coach Howard. And I've learned from talking to the guys throughout the years. I mean, guys like Jordan Poole and Isaiah Livers, who are great, great friends, but completely different people. And you really got to understand how to interact with them. And that's something that I find it was really great about Michigan basketball and something that I've learned a lot from everybody around me.
Yeah, you talk about the lessons that you can learn, and you hear it so much from people who played 10, 20, 30 years ago, and they say, you know, I learned this, this, and that. Along with those that you talked about with managing people, what else have you gleaned, whether it be hard work or teamwork or just appreciating where you are, taking it one day at a time? What are those lessons that you already know? You don't need to wait 20 years to say, yeah, I'm going to benefit from this.
Yeah, so I think something that I've learned, at least from the guys that have come before me, like Coach Howard and Coach Martelli in particular, I talked to him quite a bit. He actually, we have a big team group chat. It's called Michigan Basketball Family. And it's everybody that's like within the staff, players, managers. And Coach Martelli sends a quote every morning. And actually, let me read to you what he sent this morning. He has a lot of words of wisdom. And he sends something every day to kind of like get us started. And this morning he sent, acknowledging your weaknesses is a demonstration of true strength. And I always look at that every morning. And it's something like even as small as that. And it's something that some people might consider cheesy, but if you really take it with a grain of salt and you listen to what he's trying to say and you take your day with that approach, I acknowledge some weaknesses that I had like throughout the year. And I try to make myself become better because of those. So if I know that I have weaknesses in my game, I try to work on those, or I try to make sure that I am compensating for those in other ways. So even simple things like that is why I try to approach day by day. And the coaching staff really taught me how to do that really well.
Let's go back to the very beginning of your time at Michigan. You started as a manager, and by the end of your freshman year, you are suiting up in the national championship game. What was the process like just from starting to link up with Michigan basketball in one role and then getting to a point where you would then suit up and actually be a walk-on on the team?
So what was really cool, or what is really cool about Michigan basketball, is the how managers are integrated into everyday practice. So, I mean, a lot of people think managers do a lot of grunt work. And of course, there is something involved like that, like wiping up sweat, rebounding the basketball. But you are there every day. You see what drills are like. You help the guys progress along their, like, in their skills. And so I was already there. I was manager for probably a month. I went every single day because I loved it. It was even beyond the chance of being a walk-on. I just loved being there and seeing what the guys were doing, how I could help and be a part of something bigger. So I think that was what is cool with becoming a walk-on is, even though I get a jersey now, I have my name on the back. That's obviously quite an amazing experience. Being a manager, I already kind of knew what it was all about. It's about sacrificing for the team, understanding your role so you're not going to play very much, and then trying to make sure everybody gets better around you. And I think being a manager helped me best prepare to transition into being a walk-on, because in high school I was a good player. I got to score, I got to do my thing. And then in college, you really got to adjust. So that kind of being a manager is kind of, I consider, a little grace period, like figuring out what's best for the team, what's best for the program, and then carrying me on to the being a walk-on. And then to being a walk-on, you get to play on the big stage, be on the national championship. I mean, obviously didn't get the result we wanted, but that's the dream. I mean, even though I do take this role of making the team better pretty seriously, being out there is what everybody wants. And to really go out there and experience it is something I'll never forget.
That 2018 run, of course, the moment was Jordan Poole. After that, because the Montana game, you guys took a little while to pull away, and then it happened. The Texas A&M game was such a blowout. Florida State, I know the Duncan 3 was probably the second moment that you remember from that run. Mm-hmm. The Loyola game, there's, you know, it was just Mo having a great game. I don't know if there was one big play, but it was just Mo being the best player on the floor. I really think if you put Jordan at the gold medal, I'd put Duncan as the silver medalist. Mm-hmm. I think the third memory that people think back to the most of that run, one single play, is your three. What do you remember from that? Do you remember that?
The moment after it happened, I don't remember at all. It was just like, so I made the shot. I saw the shot go in, and that's when I was like, I didn't know what was going on. So, but the time leading up to that was pretty awesome, because actually Dron Simmons and I talked about this, because he was on the floor with me. He had the ball in his hand and he waved at me and he said, "Come here, come get the ball." And I was like, I thought somebody else was going to shoot, because I didn't really care. I was just looking around at the fans and I was having a good time. I was like trying to see him. Like waving to the camera, and he waved to me to come get the ball. And I kind of fumbled it at first, and I go to the top of the key. And for some reason, because I was not a pick and roll player, but Austin Davis comes, sets a screen for me. Kid's amazing guy. I will always remember that screen, because they switched out, and they switched, the kids, big guy switched on me. And after that, it just felt normal, like beyond just being on the court and the guy comes, give me a ball. Once I touched the ball, once I had it in my hands, it just felt like I've done this for so long. I've been doing this and all year. And it's like the basket's right there. It's all you gotta do is go score, because the whole crowd wants it. I wanted it. And it kind of just, after that, just kind of natural instinct took over. I mean, in practice I can make my shot, and I haven't played many games, but the times I do, I try to make the most of it. And I think that time was when I really started to build that confidence, was because I touched the ball. It was all normal again. I'd done this all year, and didn't matter how many fans are out there. Didn't matter who was standing in front of me. I had one goal, and it was to score, and obviously it worked out.
Ah, it's so cool. That's such a great story. And that was, you know, you were kind of a cult hero, a legend because of that shot. And I know that every time you came in on the floor, and I noticed this with Luke as well, people got excited. They wanted to see you make a shot. They wanted to see you guys score. Is that palpable when you're out there, especially in home games, when there is a crowd that, yeah, they're not just leaving. They really want to see CJ Baird come up with a bucket.
Yeah, and that's something that's awesome about Michigan fans. And you see it a lot with, at least in college basketball, like the guys at the end of the bench are the ones that the fans really root for the most. And I step out on the court or people call for me to step out on the court, especially the Maze Rage, the front row was right there. So they're saying like, come on, put CJ in. And I'm sitting on the bench like, yeah, let's go, man, put me in. And I walk out there and I touch the ball, no matter where it is. And everybody's like, I hear, shoot it, like from like people all the way up the top of the stands. And that's amazing. I love that because it's even beyond just like having kind of a cult hero. It's like, they want you to succeed no matter what level it is. It's like, I want you to score because it's a cool moment for the fans. It's cool for this kid who doesn't get to shine very much. And the Michigan fan base, they want everybody to have their moment. And you really can feel that on the floor. And especially like last year or last season now, geez, I am old, but it's last season, like first semester junior year, when Luke was like, we kept feeding Luke the ball. Every time he shot it, it was silent. Everybody stopped talking. Everybody was watching. It was the moment to look out for. And when he made his shot too, you see it in the fans. You look around, we're all excited on the court. But you look around, everybody's hands are up, they're high-fiving. And it's just a great feeling because when you succeed, everybody loves it. And the support you get beyond that is something that I know Luke can attest to and something that I can attest to too. I mean, it really means a lot.
Let's talk about your growth as a player, because you did have an opportunity as a junior to play in a game when it was in doubt. First half at Nebraska. You guys were without Xavier Simpson. That was a team that was struggling at that point, going to a surprisingly hostile place. Nebraska, not the most powerful Big Ten program by any stretch, but it was a Tuesday night, and that place was rocking. It was pretty much sold out. What do you remember about that, and what did that mean to you to get that opportunity for something that I have to imagine is way up there on your list of memories from your collegiate career?
I think something that was really cool, especially with having a new coach and Coach Howard, was the trust he had in me to do a job. And it's something that I really pride myself on, is I don't have to do anything. Like when I go out there and it's like the last few minutes, of course I want to go score. Of course I might take a couple shots that may not be something that I would take in a regular game. But in that moment, all I had to do was go out there and play some solid defense. Don't do anything crazy. Talk everything out. Just be a guy that can kind of make sure everything's in order. And what was awesome is I didn't know I was going in. He didn't tell me before the game that, look, you have a good chance of playing in this game. And so I just went about the same routine I always do. I'm part of scout team. I try to prep my way the way I can. And when I went out there again, it was kind of like, I was a little nervous. He called me in and I was like surprised and took my jersey off and my warm up off and I stepped out there. And again, it's hostile environment, but you're out there with guys you practice with every day. It feels normal. It felt really normal to me to be out there with the guys that I've worked so hard with. And that was something that I was really excited about, because Coach saw that he put me out there. He trusted me enough to know all the plays, know Nebraska's plays, and then go out there and not play out of my role, which is something that's really important for a really deep role player. You can't go out there and try to be a star. You can't go out there and try to take the ball from Eli Brooks. You can't do that. And just following through the processes and doing what I did in practice, kind of Coach had told me, he said that was extremely valuable. No matter who you were playing with, you adjusted your style to be what was best for the team. And I think I did that against Nebraska. I don't think I scored. I didn't score. I had one rebound. I played for 8 minutes. And the one thing I remember is just being out there that whole time and getting that opportunity. And that was probably the proudest moment of my career, was getting that chance and really, I hope, making a difference.
Team got the win. You ate up 8 minutes. Yeah. I mean, that was an undermanned team when that ball club was struggling, and you needed a win in any way, shape, or form, and you got it. Now, the main role that you did have with this ball club was the scout team. And during your 4 years, and even before you had gotten here, this program was elite in those no-day or one-day preps. If you could, without unveiling the secrets of all the scouting report, but just give me a map of what it's like on the scout team, say prepping for an NCAA tournament game where you've got a one full day prep. You play a Thursday, Saturday, or a Friday, Sunday. You still have to be in school. You still have to practice yourself, but you're also helping to get the team ready for a ball club you've probably never seen. So what are those 48 hours like from your perspective?
Yeah, so obviously you want to celebrate the win you got the day before. So an NCAA tournament, it's obviously you win and move on. It's quick. And like you said, you play a Thursday, a lot of games. We played a lot of Thursdays, Saturdays in the time I'd been here. And you beat the 14 seed or the 15 seed on Thursday, and you're back to a 7 or a 6 seed. Like it's good teams come right around. And what's really cool about Michigan scouting that I bet you a lot of teams do this too, but people don't know about it, is there's three assistant coaches, and there's three possibilities of games that you have in like your little 4-person group. So obviously you have the game you're playing right now. So one coach will scout the game you're playing on Thursday, your first game of the week. And then the other two coaches scout the possible matchups in the next round. So whoever wins, that coach that scouted them takes the scout team for the next game. So the coach already has a lot of plays all set up, a lot of film clipped. But the big thing is watching the game they played, their most recent game, like their Thursday game. And something that I think we did with UCLA this year was they played Alabama, which was just like an amazing game. And UCLA made this great comeback. Their guys were shooting, they were playing great. And once you're trying to see which way they're trending. And so for most of the year, the guy was Johnny Juzang, for example. And he obviously played an amazing game against us too. But throughout the NCAA tournament, the guy that was trending upward was Hami Hawkins. And so the coaches made a big emphasis on these two guys. Like, we had seen a few of their games. We have prepped for them most of this week. And now the scout team, we're going to walk through some plays that really feature these two guys. Because obviously you're not going to be able to go through every single play in a day. It's impossible. But you want to make sure you take away what works for them most. And I think what we did really well was take away Hawkins against UCLA. I don't think he did not have an all-star game. It was mostly Juzang. And Hawkins, we were very concerned with too. And we did a really good job taking him away. Just didn't bounce our way, obviously, but I think that's what's really good for us, is we have the opportunity to have really good staff that can cover all bases and make sure we're best prepared in one day. So I think it's a lot of, I don't know how many other schools do that, but it's been really special in Michigan to see that.
Yeah, it's been fun. And I mean, that's something, gosh, I was talking to Coach Martelli at some point during the season, and it came up the fact that, you know, there was a lot of veterans, there were seniors. You know, the prevailing thought was obviously, in addition to all the seniors, Franz was probably not long for this program. Mm-hmm. And Coach Martelli went out of his way to say, you know, we're also going to be losing guys off the scout team. How did you get better in terms of contributing? Because you play a role, right? Like, you might be the Johnny Juzang on the scout team. I know Jaron Faulds had to be the Luka Garza and the Travion Williams. I mean, boy, he was a star in those mm-hmm. scout teams with all the guys he had to become. So mm-hmm. how did you improve? And I mean, I have to imagine, like anything, you get better at it as you do it more and more.
And what was really cool is it was passed along. Like, the Big Ten is so good. There's so many good players across the board. And you have a chance to be somebody good every day. And that's how I got better, was I had guys like Xavier. I actually played, now that I think about it, I played all 5 positions in scout team. So I played point guard through center at some point in my 4 years. And like freshman year, sophomore year, I played as Nogel Eastern, a guy from Purdue, non-shooting guard, just a big, strong post-up player. And then earlier this year, I played as, because I'm not 6'11", but I played as Micah Potter. And pick and pop big that can really shoot. And stuff like that was really improved my breadth, like what I could do with the game. Because I think what Coach Beilein said was, even though I was kind of an undersized forward / guard, I could do so many different things, which was like set screens, rebound, pick and pop, shoot, score in the post, and even bring the ball up the court. And that's where my all-around game has improved so much because of scout team. I got to play so many different roles, learn so many different plays, and now I'm hopefully going to take that knowledge. And I do hope to coach eventually, but I think my all-around game has improved even more than I ever anticipated. I got to guys one of the best defensive teams in the country almost every year, and I would still score, and I was really proud of that. I'd go out there, I'd score, I'd do my thing, and it pushed me to be better every day. My mom even asks me now, like, what would it have been like if you had gone to play like at a small D3 or D2 school? And I always say, I wouldn't be as good as I am now. It wouldn't be anywhere close because of the things I've been able to do, what scout teams brought to my game, and the people I've played against have pushed me to be the best I can be. And that's something that I'm always grateful for about Michigan.
Lastly, before we let you go, you mentioned your internship coming up with Ernst & Young. What are the short-term goals, the medium-term goals, and the long-term dreams for you as a professional? Do you have any of that sorted out right now, or is it just a, hey, let's see how this goes and kind of take it from there?
So short-term, I've seen coming back my master's program next year for Master's of Accounting. I need to take a certain amount of credits to sit for the CPA exam, which is my goal to do next summer. And once I take that, I hope to start at Ernst & Young. I'm really hoping that works out for me this summer, and I'm hoping that leads to a full-time offer. That'll lead me around Detroit, which is good. I grew up here, love this area, and I'm hoping to work at Ernst & Young for my life's 5-year plan right now is to work at Ernst & Young. I'll be a young guy, can work the long hours, can get some experience talking to other businesses through the audit and assurance program, which is what I want to do. And then even beyond that, I've kind of dabbled in the idea of starting my own firm, my own accounting firm. Even I've talked to my parents about this a little bit too, I'm interested in law school. That's a little more hazy when down to the future a little bit, but I think, Ernst & Young is a really solid short-term plan, at least for the first 5 years. Once I finish next year, and, I'm hoping that that really works out for me. And I think beyond that, coaching would be great as kind of a side activity at first, probably at the high school level to start to kind of see, because something the coaches always said was coaching is not for everybody. You really got to see if you're all in. And since I have other options like through accounting and stuff like that, I don't think going the college route would be the best for me right away, because then I would kind of have to throw everything else out of the water just to go be my full-time profession. I want to see if it's for me first. So that's kind of my short-term plan, and I'm hoping it works out.
I have pretty high hopes for you, my man. I think it's going to work out great. And I hope you stick around, because I'm telling you, man, if Terry Mills has to miss a game, you're my first call. Because, I mean, the analysis would be flawless.
I love it. And that's something I've always loved. There's you remember Robbie Hummel played for Purdue for a while. He was obviously a great player. Now he does BTN, and I listen to him. And the knowledge these guys bring, I mean, to every, like, color commentating, even it's so interesting to listen to. Even Coach Beilein too, he color commentated a game, and he's giving analysis. I'm sitting there, I'm like, this is really good. But the normal listener would be like, what's he talking about? What's this guy on? But it's some really good stuff. And I mean, you got really great minds out there commentating, like Terry and Coach Beilein and Robbie Hummel. I mean, I'd love to do that sometime. That'd be really fun.
All right, man. Well, I will definitely keep you in mind for that. CJ, I'll tell you, man, I was really glad we could get you on here. I know fans wanted to hear kind of the post-mortem, because, boy, it was fun watching you play. It was fun watching this team play. Congratulations on all the success. And it's crazy that there's even more success on the horizon for you.
Yeah, thank you so much. And this has been an awesome experience for me, and I'm really happy and grateful to Michigan for all it's done for me. And it's really set me up well for the future.
Now, I don't want Terry Mills to miss a game because, well, let's face it, he is the star. He is the true voice of Michigan men's basketball. But if he does, you better believe I'll be calling up CJ Baird. Such a well-spoken young man. We'll miss him around these parts, but big things ahead for the former Wolverine. Thanks again to Kerry Moore for joining us earlier on the podcast. Always thankful for the work of Sarah Van Meter and Tom Weirot in helping to arrange these interviews from Michigan Sports Information Department. That'll do it for me, Brian Bush. As always, please subscribe, rate, review, drop us a line, MichiganWolverinesRadio@gmail.com. That's MichiganWolverinesRadio@gmail.com. Always thankful for the feedback, for the podcast ideas, and most importantly, for those ratings and reviews. They help us reach more Michigan fans. That'll do it. Thank you again so much for listening to this week's edition of Defend the Block. Go Blue!
Thanks for listening to today's edition of Defend the Block, part of our Michigan Athletics Podcast Network, MGo Blue Podcasts. The preceding is a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Michigan Sports Network.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig.
inspiring kid confidence.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.